listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and thanks for downloading the show. I'm Rob Daly. This week, Barcelona and Atletico drop points in the La Liga title race. Paris Saint-Germain lose at home to Monaco. Will they lose focus now the title's wrapped up before facing Manchester City? The Istanbul derby between Galatasaray and Fenerbahce is postponed after security concerns following a suicide bomb attack in the city. We talk PSV versus Ajax with Dutch football journalist Michael Jongsma, and we're joined by Jamie Lawrence, who tells us why he felt he had to speak out about racism at a recent game while playing for his club Trentin.
This is Football in Europe.
Don't forget to tweet us using @FIEPodcast. We're going to read out some of your messages later on in the show. And please leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us stay in the charts as well. Unsurprisingly, Chris Parrott joins me. Chris, hello.
Hello.
You're not in my makeshift studio today. What are you doing?
No, well, I had a weekend of domestic appliance hell. Shower broke, washing machine broke. Mm. So, unfortunately, I've got to be in my flat and absolutely
why?
Well, I don't know. They just both decided to break. So it's probably best I'm not there given.
Yeah, but you don't need it. What's that got to do with the show?
Well, that means I couldn't come to yours because we called out the repair people. Mm. And very helpfully, they gave us a time slot between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. on Monday.
Oh, I love that.
Which isn't really a time slot; it's the entire day.
Okay, so we're gonna try and do this over Skype anyway today. Chris, let's talk about that. There's so much to get through today. I feel we should start by talking about the events in Istanbul over the weekend. So, the big derby of Istanbul had to be postponed at the weekend. Do you want to break down exactly what happened?
Yeah, exactly. Galatasaray Fenerbahce was called off just over an hour before kickoff. Some of the fans had already turned up. Actually, you may have heard, but there was an awful terror attack in Istanbul on Saturday. The Turkish authorities are blaming that on the so-called Islamic State. And it was called off, the governor says, because of a serious intelligence about a threat to the game, which is a tragic event that happened in Istanbul. It was going to be... It's even more interesting in a way because there was another awful attack in Ankara about 8 days ago, where Umut Bulut's dad was one of those who died in a bomb attack there. So it was going to be odds the wrong word, but it was going to be a derby of solidarity in a way. You know, two fierce rivals, as we know, but there was going to be that sense of we're Turkey standing up to terror, and then the game had to be postponed. So, you know, tragic events in Istanbul, and that game was part of it in the end. And, you know, you have to say if the authorities had any information that people were under threat, then they had to call the game off, which they did.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, isn't it? But sometimes the welfare of supporters is paramount. And we have seen that with international games this year, of course, after what happened in Paris. So we'll keep you up to date with what's going to happen with that derby, because they're going to have to play it at some point as well. So let's get through some of the other stories that we wanted to talk about before going around the leagues. And one of these, Chris, I really like this one from Portugal, where Sporting, their players wore shirts with their names deliberately spelt wrong on the back.
Why?
So basically, the club is sick of, I think, unauthorised vendors selling, you know, knockoff Sporting shirts. Right. So Teo Gutierrez, who normally has Teo on the back of his shirt, had Gutierrez spelt all wrong, and João Mário had J. Dario on the back of his shirt. And then they made an announcement at halftime that's why it was to stop trying to encourage fans to stop buying fake replica shirts and buy the official one. And they swapped their shirts to the correct ones, and they went on to win the game 5-1, I think it was. I think even Brian Ruiz got on the score sheet.
It's novel. Would it? I'm not saying that I buy fake goods, but would it? I don't know if that would stop people buying.
Well, here's what I'd do, Chris. I'd look at the fake one and go, is that spelt wrong? And if it was, I wouldn't buy it. And if it's spelt right, I'd buy it, mate.
Yeah, actually, yeah, Sporting, you got it wrong.
Chris, do you want to tell us what Nicholas Bentner's up to? Because he's in a bit of bother again.
Yeah, he is. We've all slept through an alarm, but his was particularly expensive. Turned up 45 minutes late for training and was fined €50 for every minute. So, Yes, Lord Bentner.
Do the maths.
Yeah, 2,250 euros.
Have you got that written
absolutely,
down?
Absolutely, yep. I mean, it's been a campaign of misery, really, for Bentner. It was only the other week that Klaus Allofs, the Wolfsburg Sporting, labelled his time there a failure, which is a strong word, but he's barely playing at the moment, isn't he? Bastos.
I think Dieter Hecking's actually frozen him out, I think. I think he said that he won't
play. I think that was...
Or he's not part of the
plans. So I think the turning up late is just, you know, another incident, if you like. I mean, Bastos is injured, but, you know, Max Kruse is playing as that false nine. So, yeah, I mean, Bentner's probably going to go in the summer. I was thinking about this afterwards, because wouldn't it be very Nicholas Bentner to have had a brilliant Euro? But he can't, because Denmark aren't there. So...
Oh, right, yeah.
And, you know, if he had a brilliant... You know, you never know who would have picked him up. It wasn't that long he was playing for Juventus, was it? So he hasn't got that shot window because Denmark were beaten in the playoffs by Sweden. So you wonder where Bentner will turn up. Steve Bruce still likes him, so maybe he'll go to Hull. But, yeah, I think his time at Wolfsburg is coming rapidly to a close. And, yeah, set your alarm, Nicholas, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some. He scored 3 goals in over 30 league games for them. But his goal rate for Denmark's fantastic. 29 goals in 72 appearances. That's pretty good at international level. So Nicholas in a lot of bother, unsurprisingly. Meanwhile, in Germany at the weekend, Dortmund won 3-1 at Augsburg. Dortmund, of course, drawn with Liverpool in the Europa League. And Dortmund stay within 5 points of Bayern, who, thanks to Robert Lewandowski, got a 1-0 win at Köln, the FC Cologne, at the weekend. Lewandowski's goal coming 10 minutes into that one. And yet Bayern still way out in front at the moment after, of course, they qualified for the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Schalke beat Gladbach to go ahead of them in the table, actually, into fourth in the Champions League spots in the Friday night game. Goretzka with a goal late on there. So Schalke in fourth at the moment in the battle for Champions League football. Chris, there's one more story I wanted to tell you about, which I don't think I emailed you about. So I just want to break this down about an affair, a love affair in Denmark. How does that sound?
That sounds really good for a Monday morning.
Okay, so basically, a Danish footballer has had a relationship with one of his teammates' wives.
Oh, no.
Christian Keller, at the Danish top-flight team Randers, started having a relationship with Kira Egsgaard. I'm really bad with Scandinavian names, so I'm really sorry about that. So basically, Keller, the other player in question, is Jonas Boring. Now, Jonas Boring is married to Egsgaard, and I think they are separated but living in the same home at the moment. Nonetheless, it's all gone public. Keller's been dropped from the team, but he is the captain. So Colin Todd is the manager there, and he said, "You're out of the team for the moment." Now, Keller says, "Well, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with all of this." The player who's been involved in the affair, he says, "You know, I doubt we'll ever play together again, but I'm sure one of us will be leaving. I'm not the one to be deciding that."
Mm.
Thoughts?
Surely it should be him that leaves the club. I mean, just Terry and Bridge is the one that springs to mind. And they weren't playing at Chelsea, but England was still potentially an issue. I can't imagine Colin Todd's particularly happy. He's...
Yeah, well, I'll read out what he said, the former Bolton Derby manager. And I'll read it in sort of the tone that I imagine this is in. "Oh, it's been a very difficult week and the circumstances led to him being dropped from the squad. There's been a lot of talk. We have concepts such as unity in spirit and respect is apparently gone after what's happened. It's a very critical situation now."
Now, I've...
Christ. I mean, he didn't say that bit at the end. But.
I've had the privilege, or the not so much of a privilege, of interviewing Colin Todd, and I think it would have been significantly more angry than that.
Oh, I did exasperated. You think livid?
Yeah, livid. That's a good point, because to the press, probably exasperated, but then inside, livid and slightly scary.
What are you hanging out with Todd's for?
When he was at Bradford City.
Oh.
And they weren't going through the best time, shall we say, so it wasn't the easiest manager to interview.
You're joking.
Nope, exactly. But no, I mean, I genuinely feel sorry for him in that situation, because it's his captain. And it's another of his players. And you, I mean, of all the things you can't control, that's got to be pretty annoying if you're a coach. You just want to look him in the eye and say, why? You know, And, you know, do it in the off-season if you're going to do it anywhere.
Oh, great advice, Chris. I can't help but notice the irony that the team name is Randers. Okay, let's stop mucking about. We're going to round up La Liga and some of Serie A shortly. But first, let's turn our attention to our special guest today, Jamie Lawrence.
Football in Europe.
Okay, joining us now is trenchant defender Jamie Lawrence, who was with us, you may remember, on the very first show of Football in Europe ever. Jamie, thank you very much for joining us on the show again.
Oh, it's lovely to be back to talk to you again.
I mean, you scored a belter at the weekend. Let's not ignore this. You've been out for much of the season with that ankle injury that we talked about at the start of the season. But you scored a lovely goal at the weekend in a 2-0 win. Do you want to talk us through it?
Yeah, it was nice to be back in the starting 11, you know, for the past couple of weeks. And I had a great feeling before the game, playing in the, you know, holding midfield role.
Holding midfield? I didn't know that.
I did, yeah. I played holding midfield at the start of the game. We actually had an injury to our right back, so we had to kind of shift things around, and I moved back into centre back, which is a more, you know, more natural position for me, at being, you know, given my size and stuff like that. But the goal came from, I think it was a set piece. They didn't really clear the ball too well. We won it back in the corner, got laid back to me on the edge of the box, and took a touch out of my feet and put it in the bottom corner. So yeah, it was a good way to come back and prove myself into the team again.
We've posted a video of the goal actually on our Twitter timeline on Monday. Who was it who came over and gave you a hug in the technical area as well?
That was the physio. Yeah, the physio. Obviously, I've been working with him a lot. And he said to me before the game, obviously there's been a lot of talk this week about the racist incidents and what the team has been going through and as a club. And he came up to me before the game and he said, look, just do your best today. And I have a feeling you're going to score a goal. And when you score a goal, show people who you are. And so that's why I did the point to your name celebration and ran over to him.
Well, people can see that on our Twitter. A great goal. But Jamie, you were moved to make comments on Instagram recently and on Twitter about a racist incident at a recent game playing for Trenčín. You do have a number of black players in your team. You said the level of abuse that the team suffered of late has been horrific.
Yeah, it was really horrific. I mean, we played midweek in the cup against a team who are currently top of the second tier, and we was away, and their fans are known to be quite abrasive and quite hard, but I mean, none of us were really prepared for that kind of abuse. We have a few Nigerian players in our team. We have a couple of Dutch players in our team who are based in the Caribbean, so you know they're also black. And in previous games, away games that we've played in the league, sometimes you'll hear monkey chants, for example, when we take in a corner, just small things like that when we score, which is obviously, it's terrible. But, you know, we've had to deal with that and we kind of know to expect that and not to let it bother us. But this was really next level stuff. I mean, we went one goal up through a penalty, which obviously didn't make us popular. Yeah, they started chanting monkey noises at us during corners, free kicks, anything they could really do. As soon as one of our players went over to take a corner, they would start throwing bottles at him. Another one of our Caribbean players, he went down on the left-hand side next to their fans. And while he was on the floor trying to receive treatment, they were also throwing things at him. And I think what really kind of nailed it in was at the end of the game, their fans came and stormed the pitch. So we tried to kind of get inside quite quickly and headed to the tunnel. And the players' tunnel, you actually have to go kind of underneath the stands or through the stands to get to the players' tunnel. And their fans had gathered on both sides and actually started to spit on us as we made our way back to the players' tunnel.
I mean, it's horrific to hear that kind of thing, you know, happening at a professional football club. It's absolutely staggering, and the continent does still have its problems with racism. Football still does have a problem with racism. But what's the mood in the dressing room like after something like that?
Well, I think immediately afterward, everyone was kind of a bit shocked. Everyone was very disgusted at what had happened. The day after, we kind of obviously we all spoke about it as a team, and a few of the players we put out comments and to social media and stuff. Because you kind of feel a bit powerless in that situation. There's not much you can do to kind of affect change. And the only tools that we have is we can reach people through social media. And so a few of us tried that. And the next day we actually talked to the club, and the club said, yeah, look, it was really good what you guys did, putting it out there. The club's also going to release a video, and the club have also now released a video of the Say No to Racism, following the UEFA's footsteps in that. So actually the change room is pretty good at the moment. I think it's actually made us a lot stronger. Obviously we had to come together as a group, protect each other and stick together. So actually the mood in the change room is good. I think everyone's just a bit disgusted about what happened.
Does the league talk about this stuff, Jamie? Does it get talked about at a national level and dealing with the problem, or do you feel it's largely ignored?
Well, I feel in general it is largely ignored here. I think now they're going to have to definitely look at these incidents because of what the club has said and spoken out, and because of what the players have done. I think they do have to look at it now. And hopefully take action. I mean, that's all we can really hope for. It does happen, but it should never be tolerated.
Is there any point where you think, I don't want to play my football in Slovakia when you're having to face this kind of thing, for every away game? Does it get to you on that level?
Absolutely, yeah, it does. It really kind of reaches you. It wears you down more than it's not one big hit. It kind of just wears you down slowly but surely, and you just get so sick of it. And I think it definitely does put people off playing here, and it is also a reason why people would want to leave.
The club's got a great Dutch connection. Do you think that's part of the reason that your squad is diverse?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously in Holland there are so many diverse clubs and so many foreign players, the Dutch country in itself has a lot of different factions, from the Antilles, from the Caribbean and Morocco and all of that kind of stuff. So I think they're very tolerant, and I think that's kind of the philosophy of our club is because it's very Dutch. I think it kind of rubs off, and we have great contacts with obviously Nigerian players. We have a lot of young Nigerian players come to play for us. We've had three or four young Brazilian players come to play for us and move on to bigger clubs. So I think our club is recognised as a club where foreign players can come and move forward in their career and feel comfortable in doing that. Obviously within the home environment of the club. However, once you're outside that environment, it's difficult to control what happens.
Let's talk about football. Jamie, how are Trenčín doing in the Slovakian top flight? Your team's defending champions, of course.
Yes, we are. We're currently top, and we're 9 points clear. And I think we have about 11 games left. So
it's looking good.
Looking good. We're through to the semi-finals of the cup. So we've got two legs to go in that, and then the final. So we're looking good. I mean, we're defending a double, and we're still in the running for both cups.
How are you finding your football at the moment, having played and got a run of games in the team?
At the moment, I'm very happy. I'm playing very, very, very good football. Scoring goals.
week in, week out.
Week in, week out, I'm really enjoying it at the moment. It's been nice, obviously, after such a tough injury and such a long rehab and recovery. It's nice to be completely confident in my body again and just playing football, doing what I love and enjoying it, getting the minutes on the pitch, which is, all I really want to do.
Jamie, thank you so much for coming back on the show. I think we'll have to check in with you at the end of the season to see if the team's claimed that double. Will you come back on?
I will, of course.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
And a big thanks to Jamie for coming back on the podcast. Chris Parrott is still with me. Chris, let's look at the Turin derby at the weekend in Serie A, Torino versus Juve. What happened?
Juventus won again. They always beat their City rivals. It's a ridiculous record. It was the game that turned their season around earlier on in the campaign, a late Juan Cuadrado winner. It was a lot easier this time. I say easier. They won 4-1, but there was some decisions that didn't go their way, shall we say. They had a goal disallowed, which would have made it 2-2. Giampiero Ventura was absolutely furious, the Torino coach. I think if he said it in this country, he'd be looking at a ban. I don't know what the Italian authorities will think about it. He basically said, how can all of these things happen? Maybe he wasn't, but he said the incidents were so incredibly obvious that I have to wonder how on earth the referee didn't see them. How is it possible all this can happen? Which I think that's quite strong words from a coach. He wasn't happy. Max Allegri actually was fair, and he said, yeah, we did get some good decisions, but they won again, 4-1 victory. And as I said, they always beat Torino.
Why is this such a big derby, Chris? I mean, Torino were once the power of Italian football, but that's many years ago.
It's a big footballing city. It's the oldest Italian derby. That's one of the reasons it's so big. It's two huge clubs, as you mentioned. You know, we all know about Juventus now, but Torino in the 40s in particular were the Italian side. Then they had an awful air disaster where the entire team died, unfortunately, in the 40s. And it was pretty much the whole of the Italian squad at that time as well. So they're a huge traditional name in Italian football. Who knows what they would have gone on to win, that particular team, had they not died in that awful accident. It was so bad that Italy, I think, then took the boat to Brazil for the 1950 World Cup. So they have that is very much in their club. And as ever with derbies, Rob, it's football is the sport they play, but it's bigger than that. And it's the, you know, Juventus, I think, are considered the bourgeois team. They were created by students, and Torino maybe the more industrial side, and then some Juve dissidents were set up in the formation of Torino. So it goes way beyond football, as you can expect.
Paul Pogba had a great game, by the way. He scored a wonderful free kick, 2 assists. He 39 out of 48 passes, 6 tackles, won 5 out of his 7 take-ons. Just a brilliant performance from Paul Pogba, who scored against Bayern in the Champions League. Gigi Buffon, though, Chris, he conceded, but he has surpassed that clean sheet record.
Yeah, Sebastiano Rossi's 22-year record broken. I couldn't be by a better man, could it, in Buffon? Simply amazing. He only needed 3 minutes and 1 second to break it. last goal was conceded in early January against Sampdoria in Serie A. It was
in early January.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal from Buffon. And as he said, he was on Facebook on his page, and he thanked, really nice this, I thought, he thanked every single player that's helped him to break the record. He sort of did a breakdown. You can go and see it, to all of the players, saying a special thank you.
He sort of names every single player in that list, doesn't he? And then gives a little line.
Yeah, he's just a hero, isn't he? Let's be honest. He's one of the best goalkeepers, certainly in my lifetime of watching football. As I said, more than 20 years that record has stood. And in the end, it took a penalty to beat Buffon as well from Torino. So still in open plays, unbeaten. But it was also, just to go back to the how fierce it is, it was pretty lively, should we say, in Turin over the weekend. The Torino fans bar was set on fire, or one of them was. And authorities were investigating. Then the Juve team bus was pelted with rocks. I think a window next to Leonardo Bonucci was smashed en route to the game. We all know about Juve's relationship with Inter, you know, and how big that derby is. But the Turin derby is enormous. And again, as I mentioned, Torino recently just cannot beat Juve. And they roll on. And one would imagine now, after, you know, how exciting was Serie A, still is at the start of the season, everybody beating each other, a different leader. Well, Juve still 3 points clear. And if they keep on winning, you just can't see them being stopped anymore.
Well, Napoli stayed within 3 points of Juve after a victory over Genoa, but they needed 2 goals in the last 9 minutes to get that 3-1 success. Gonzalo Higuain with 2. He's now on 29 league goals for the season. Roma-Inter was 1-1, so Roma stay 5 clear in the Champions League spot. I have to read out this quote, Chris, from Luca Toni. I've just seen this. So he plays for LS Verona. And this is the quote from Luca Toni. "It's right we get jeered by our fans and have to apologise in front of the curva. When it was needed, the fans applauded today, but we deserved this reaction because we were disastrous. Today, all our limitations became crystal clear. Some of the Verona players don't belong in Serie A, so obviously we're going to go down."
Cool. He might be right. 2 wins all season. 19 points. It's been a disaster, hasn't it?
Yeah, I saw them in the flesh play Juve, and they had absolutely nothing. And Luca Toni was injured that day, so they really were limited. Milan-Lazio, Chris, how did that one end up at the weekend?
1-1. Sinisa Mihajlovic, of course, a former Lazio player, got a point at home. It's really interesting. I mean, Juve and Napoli are the top two, as we know. I think Roma now 5 points clear of Inter. Well, still 5 points clear. They both drew at the weekend. You'd back them to get that third place, wouldn't you? But behind that, Inter, Fiorentina and AC Milan now. Milan are 6 points behind Fiorentina in that battle for the last European place. And, you know, they're in the Coppa Italia final, Milan. That might be their last chance of European football because, you know, they spent so much money, didn't they, in the summer with Bacca and Luis Adriano. And if they don't get European football again, such a huge name not even to be in the Europa League.
Yeah, and Mario Balotelli, I think, was getting booed towards the end of that game as well. That loan move from Liverpool really has not worked out. Talk very briefly on La Liga, because both Barcelona and Atletico dropped points. Barca were 2-0 up, but threw it away at Villarreal. The game finished 2-2. Some very poor refereeing decisions in that game in favour of Barcelona. Xavi Mathieu with an own goal, and Neymar actually scored a penalty in that game. Penalties have been a problem for Barcelona this season. Sporting Gijon beat Atletico 2-1. What a great result for them. Atletico will face Barcelona, of course, in the Champions League. Valencia 0, Celta Vigo 2. And Chris, the pressure is only mounting on Gary Neville at the moment.
Yeah, they chanted again, Neville go now, in the game. They weren't great again. They're not that far above the relegation zone, 6 points, 3 straight defeats. I mean, you know, it's not beyond possibility. And when Neville took over, you know, people were saying, well, if he does well, we could get in the top four. Interesting, there's been a lot of talk, as you'd expect now, because it's the first real time it's come to a head that he's the England on the coaching staff. I saw his pre-match.
Yeah, because we've got an international break now.
Yeah,
so
I saw his pre-match press conference when he was explaining that there's only 8 players there, 3 coaches are remaining, so that would be plenty. He's going away with England. He'll be back, he said, the Wednesday before the game at the weekend. He'll be back before the players, so it's no problem. That has changed now, and you wonder if it's changed because of the nature of the defeat by Celta, that he's not going to join up with the England squad, it would appear. And basically said, you know, I don't want anybody saying that I'm not fully committed to Valencia. So he's spoken to Roy Hodgson. You know, Roy Hodgson will understand, he's been a coach, he knows about all the pressures. But it's not, I don't think it's an ideal situation for anybody, frankly. Gary Neville included, Valencia definitely, and now England, because, you know, Euros are less than 3 months away. He has a big say in who's going to play, as he should.
Surely
as well.
He's not even thinking about Euros.
Well,
surely.
I think he has to, doesn't he? I mean, as an England fan,
if I was a Valencia fan, I mean, you'd be furious.
Exactly. And yeah, fully take that. But as an England fan, he's a coach. He has a big say, as he should, as I mentioned, because of his position. But if he is picking the players, or if he has a say in picking the players, then him not being there to see them on the training, okay, he's seen them all before. That's not ideal, I don't think, for England to have that, as I said, less than 3 months away.
I don't think Gary Neville at this point, I mean, I really wanted him to succeed at Valencia and I want him to succeed as a coach, but I don't think he should be having a say in the England squad. He can't be seeing enough of the players in action. It's impossible. If he really is focused on trying to turn Valencia around, when is he getting the time
to
sit down and watch tapes of Premier League games and how England players are getting on?
Yeah, I'd agree. But I would be very surprised if that's not the case. And England have decisions to make. I know we've talked about this a lot because they waltzed through qualifying. They were brilliant, 100% record. But a lot of those players aren't the ones who are absolutely banging form, the Dele Allies, the Harry Kanes, etc. So I think England,
absolutely,
do have selection questions. And I think, well, they have four matches between now and the tournament, two of which are in the next 10 days. And if he's not going to be there, then, you know, you can see how it was always going to be a problem with the job share, or it might be perceived as a problem. And I think now that it hasn't gone well at Valencia and he is staying behind, he might have more questions to answer.
Yeah, I agree on that. Okay, we'll talk about that more soon. A quick one on Real Madrid. They beat Sevilla 4-0 at the weekend. And Karim Benzema was back and scored a wonderful first-time volley goal. I did see a lot of this game. And I just wonder, Chris, I put it out on our Twitter account, you know, just is Karim Benzema perhaps Real Madrid's most important player? And we've got a couple of tweets in here. La Liga Gav says he is arguably their most consistent. Mm. He always puts everything into games. And then Stuart Overton makes a good point. Not only his goals, but his all-round contribution make him invaluable. And he seems to knit that front three together. I mean, he clipped in a wonderful sort of assist for Gareth Bale to score, who's now the record British goal scorer in La Liga ahead of Gary Lineker. He overtook him at the weekend, and Gary Lineker tweeted about that. Chris, in terms of Benzema's importance, what do you think? How key is he to Real Madrid? Is he their most important player?
You can certainly make a big case for that. I still think it's Ronaldo, but I think Benzema is absolutely vital. You mentioned it there. The amount of goals he has laid on for Cristiano Ronaldo is mad. I think he's in the top 10 all-time European Cup goal scorers. You're talking about a fantastic player, Karim Benzema. And as you mentioned there, or a couple of the tweets, the way that he knits that front three when he plays, I think he's absolutely pivotal to Zinedine Zidane. Because for a number of reasons, I think when there's no Ronaldo or Bale, they still have James. I know he's not as good in that front three, but when they don't have Benzema, they often, you know, Ronaldo will play
That's
through
my
the middle.
Point. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so because they don't have any backup for Benzema, maybe he is the most important player if he's not there because no one can replace him. But he's so big. And I saw Marcus headlines saying, El BBC are coming for you, Barca, because El Clasico is, what, 11 days away, first Saturday back after the international break. And when those three are on song, as we saw 2 years ago when they won the Champions League, it will be great to see them against Suarez, Messi and Neymar because they're not far off on their top form. It's the two best forward lines in world football, I think. And sorry, Müller and Lewandowski, you're pretty good. But if Bale, Benzema and Ronaldo can stay fit for the rest of the season, then, you know, Real Madrid are going to go pretty close in the Champions League, I would suspect.
OK, let's turn our attention to Eredivisie football now.
You're listening to Football in Europe.
Joining us now from a train station in the Netherlands is football journalist Michael Jongsma. Michael, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, no worries. How are you?
You're heading into the Opta office in Amsterdam. You're not going to be late because of us, are you?
Oh, no. No, I don't think so. I've timed out everything well. You know how important accuracy and punctuality is when you work for a company like Optus.
Look, let's not muck about too much because at the weekend, big game, PSV Ajax at the weekend. PSV were top of the table going into that game. It's those two battling it out to be Dutch champions this season. What happened in the game, Michael?
Well, everybody kind of was expecting PSV to just turn up and win the game. They have been in spectacular form so far this calendar year, impressed against Atletico Madrid, although I do think that has been slightly overplayed given that they hardly had any real chances of winning the game. But they were full of confidence going into this one. And Ajax have been better over the last few weeks, but were in quite a dismal form earlier on. But yeah, this game was completely different to all of the expectations. Algemeen Dagblad polled that 70% of its readers actually thought PSV would win it and win the title. And yeah, it took 72 seconds for Arek Milik to actually just completely shift the well, shared the power, basically. He scored a header from a Bazour cross. And PSV never really got into the game. And especially with the second half, they were, well, just happy to get the game over with, it seemed. And Anwar El Ghazi with the 2-0 finishing the game off and putting Ajax in the first spot again.
Are you surprised that Ajax have managed to climb their way back to the top of the table?
Yeah, I am, because I think PSV have the best squad in the league. Not so much maybe in talent, but in balance, because PSV have a bit more experience with Mexican internationals like Hector Moreno, Andres Guardado. Luke de Jong is a competent striker, of course. It's quite a subtle team, and yeah, I was kind of expecting PSV to just hold on quite easily and just take the title. And all credit to Frank de Boer as well, who I think got his game plan spot on. The opposite goes for Philip Cocu, I think, who, to be fair, I mean, when you can see the goal that early in the game, it's kind of hard to alter your plan and do something else. But this wasn't his finest performance as a manager.
In terms of what PSV are achieving this season, do you think that Champions League tie with Atletico and their campaign in general has taken a lot out of them, or is that just, would that just be an excuse?
No, I do think that plays part. I mean, at the turn of the year, they were still theoretically in for three prizes with the Cup, the Champions League, and the Eredivisie. And of course, they weren't going to win the Champions League, but it's taken a lot out of them. And yeah, you can see that the players are really knackered. A guy like Davy Proper, who has been quite good for them this season, just looks shattered when he played against Ajax this weekend. A lot of the players have a really busy schedule. On the other hand, I do think that with Lucien being out for several months, Willems just coming back from injury, and Marco van Ginkel being loaned from Chelsea, there was some fresh blood to Philip Cocu's disposal. I do think that in terms of rotation, he might have made a couple of wrong decisions and not giving players the time. But for Ajax, it was, I mean, they were, I think they made the third round in the Cup and, in the Europa League, got knocked out in the group stages as well. So there is an element of them being a bit fresher.
Okay, so at the top, I actually lead the table by 2 points. I want to ask you about two Chelsea loan players who are in the Netherlands at the moment, Mikel. And I'll start by talking about Marco van Ginkel. I commentated on PSV against NEC, where he scored his second goal in two games relatively recently. How is he playing? And do you think he's good enough to come back and earn a place in the Chelsea team next season, which will likely be overhauled in some way?
Well, I actually thought when he moved to Chelsea there was a chance of him getting a chance in the first team. Because at that point he really had that, just he made such progress, and the Chelsea dressing room was kind of old, and they had Lampard and Ramirez as their main central midfielder. So I thought there was a chance for him back then, but he's just not made the progress that we all hoped he would have made. I think to an extent, you could argue that he was at Strootman's level when he went to Chelsea or thereabouts. Yeah. And he hasn't really pushed on from that. So I think at this moment, Chelsea is definitely, at this moment, actually not, of course, with Chelsea not being brilliant in the league. But in general, what Chelsea aspires to be for that level, he's not cut out at the moment, I think. And I really hope he does improve a bit. Now that he gets an extended run at PSV, but I would be very surprised to see him make the first team next season.
Let's talk about an Englishman who's playing in the Eredivisie this season. Then Dom Solanke.
Yeah, I feared you would go there.
Yeah. So,
Groningen man, it wasn't a great result.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to talk about it, but he scored a couple of goals this weekend for Vitesse. What do you rate to Solanke's development, and could you see him coming back and maybe, I mean, we're seeing Marcus Rashford do wonderful things for Manchester United. Do you think, from what you've seen of Solanke, could he come back and do something?
He's a funny one there. I mean, he's quite clearly a really talented player, but he can go a bit missing in the games, and you do feel that senior football for him is actually really a new experience. And he's done okay so far. I think he's scored about seven goals now. which is acceptable given that he's been out for a month or two as well, through injury and at first just not having the proper age to play as well. I do like him. There's something about him that I like, but he's not been as spectacular as Bertrand Traoré was two seasons ago when he joined Vitesse.
Right.
I think from him we kind of saw that just that raw pace and acceleration, and Bertrand Traoré as a striker is really hard for a defender to grasp onto. And for Solanke, I do think that there's a player in there. Really difficult to see what level he can aspire to reach, but he's definitely an interesting prospect. And Vitesse really was a good environment for him to learn.
Mikhail, thank you very much for joining us. I'll let you catch your train.
Yeah, well, no worries.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
And a big thank you to Mikhail for joining us as always. Chris, let's finish the show with a bit of French football talk and then an international talk. So PSG lost at the weekend to Monaco 2-0 at home. To me, it looked like pretty much a full-strength PSG team. I didn't see the stats, but now they're champions, Chris. I wonder if they're going to lose focus a little bit.
Yeah, that 9-0 win against Troyes wrapped up the title, didn't it? Lost 2-0, 75% possession, 23 shots. You wonder, A, whether it's a bit of a freak result anyway, and B, frankly, if they have lost a bit of focus, who can blame them? They're so far clear, their season now is about the Champions League, isn't it? It's about the domestic cups as well, but it's about, can they break through that quarterfinal barrier in the Champions League? Never, ever been beyond the semi-final, so can they win the competition? They have the players. I think it's very easy, because they've won the title, to say they've lost focus. As I mentioned, even if they do, I don't think anyone can blame them, frankly. They've just been so dominant. And I wonder, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, Rob, that if they were still unbeaten in Ligue 1 and they had the chance of going through the whole season unbeaten for the first time ever in the history of the league, then they would turn up 100% every game. But now that's gone, it almost doesn't matter how many points they drop now, because they're going to win the title anyway.
A great result for Monaco, who are second in the Ligue 1 table. Just want to read out a couple of tweets on this. Andrew Gibney, who's a really good follow French football journalist on Twitter, he says, "I think the defeat will be good. It should help them refocus, but the threat is there. They did step it up for Chelsea." And Adam Summerton, a regular contributor, BT Sport football commentator, says, "Maintaining week-to-week intensity is one of the things that Blanc's never had enough credit for, in my opinion. Tough to switch it on and off." PSG losing was the only story from French football this weekend, Chris. Riots at Marseille because they cannot win at home.
No, it's just been a season. It's been a disastrous season for Marseille ever since Marcelo Bielsa walked out after the first game. And I think a lot of the trouble stemmed from that. Still, they're not happy with the chairman, Vincent Labrune. There were banners against him. There was a banner with Bielsa's face on, because there was all the contract dispute as to one of the reasons he walked away. So a lot of supporters aren't happy with the way that was dealt with by their chairman, by their board. And it's fine if the season then goes well, but if the season doesn't, and, you know, they're not that far off the relegation zone, for heaven's sake, then things come to a head. But yeah, it were ugly scenes, of course. That's one of the venues England are playing there in Euros. It's a passionate support in Marseille. It's what makes the Stade Vélodrome so brilliant. But not for the first time this season, it stepped over the mark. And there were a couple of people tried to get on the pitch. There was riot, police were called in, etc. So it wasn't good to see. But 5-2 home loss against Rennes. I mean, it's just been an awful season for Marseille, isn't it?
I mean, the pictures are frightening. I mean, how angry the fans are. They're ripping up sort of the fencing that would be keeping them in the one part of the stadium. You can see the stewards trying to keep it down. But that 5-2 loss at home to Rennes, who are fifth in the table at the moment. Worth noting that Ousmane Dembele, who we've talked about on the show before, the 18-year-old who looks very good, he scored in that game too.
Yeah, do you know who else is back?
Go on.
Hatem Ben Arfa.
Tell me.
Brilliant solo goal again. And Nice beat tiny Gazalec Ajaccio, which they were expected to, but they're still in the Champions League place. And if they get it, the third spot, Hatem Ben Arfa will have not quite single-handedly, but almost single-handedly got them there. That's quite a story. And Nice could well be in the Champions League next season.
And Hatem Ben Arfa could well be playing at the European Championships. And you'd hope to see him because he's been fantastic this season. The Belgian Cup final at the weekend. Standard Liège won the game by 2-1 against Club Brugge. Club Brugge finished the game with 10 men. Victor Valdes picking up a winner's medal. Of course, he joined earlier on in the season from Manchester United. And we'll tweet some of the images from Mark Rodden, who's a journalist we have on the show a lot. Lots of flares and lots of smoke ahead of the game. You know, just as it was about to start, but it looked like Mark had a great day, and we'll speak to him about that when he's next on the show. But Standard Liège, after a disastrous start to the season, you'll remember, I think they were even bottom at one point. Cup winners, and they missed out on the playoff spots, but they do have silverware. Chris, international friendlies. Now we're going to have a show next Monday for people sort of reviewing a lot of the international action. But what fixture are you looking forward to most?
There's a few really good ones, isn't there? Because international friendly breaks can be a bit, some people call them pointless at times, but not in the build-up to a major tournament. This is when they become really important. Italy-Spain, that's not an original answer.
Antonio, that's on Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, on Thursday, I think 7:45 UK time. Antonio Conte confirmed he's leaving after Euro. Repeat of the 2012 final, which Spain won so convincingly. And also, where exactly are these two teams, I think? Spain are, again, one of the favourites. Can they win Euro for a third time in a row? I mean, that would be absolutely remarkable. And Italy as well. They were unconvincing at times in qualifying. So, interesting to see exactly where those two are. Well, as I mentioned, we're very close to Euro now, less than 100 days.
And on Tuesday, the 29th of March, Germany play Italy. That's one of the standout games. And Belgium-Portugal is a match you're going to be commentating on, Chris.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Again, I think they're dark horses. They often go into tournaments as dark horses. Certainly
who?
With the
Portugal?
And Belgium as well, with the players they have. I know.
Oh, they're world number one now.
Yeah, exactly. Hazard, Courtois maybe haven't been bang in form. They certainly haven't been as good as they were last season. But, you know, if they turn up at Euro with those players and company can be fully fit, then they have to have a chance, don't they? And again, with Portugal, exactly where are they going to be? You'd think quarterfinals, if they do really well, semifinals. I don't know. It's a really good game, that. And I think another pointer as to exactly where those two are going into France.
Okay, Chris, thank you very much for joining me on the show today. We will be back next Monday with a brief look at all the international action. If you have enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes.
This is Football in Europe.